The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Experience the difference. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world. Welcome to Spirit of Recovery, offering support for your spiritual growth and addiction recovery. Here's Reverend Dan Beckett.
Welcome to the Spirit of Recovery on Unity Online Radio. We're glad you're with us today. I'm Reverend Dan Beckett here with special guest co-host Reverend Michelle Jelinch. And today, Reverend Michelle and I will discuss ways that spirituality and recovery intertwine and work together to support your spiritual growth in your recovery journey. But first, I have to acknowledge the sadness that we feel over the passing of Reverend Lonnie Vanderslice. This is very unexpected. I'm going to read the statement that I put on the Facebook page. I think it says it best. We're mourning her loss, and she left her earthly form on Saturday, January 4th, after a very brief battle with cancer. She was diagnosed just on December 12th, and she moved off this earthly plane just about 3 weeks later. She was a longtime advocate for disadvantaged and struggling people everywhere, especially in the recovery community. And her heart was always in everything she did, and her impact on the world has been profound. She was a dear friend, a prayer partner. I miss her very much. The show will go on, however, and I know that that is what she would tell me. Just get back to the business at hand. And we're forever blessed by her wisdom, her humor, her humility, and her strength. We love her. We love you, Lonnie. We sorely miss you. But today, let us move ahead with our show. If you're listening live, as always, you're welcome to join the discussion with your comments and questions. You can call us right now at area code 816-251-3555. Again, the number is 816-251-3555. We would love to hear from you.
Facebook users, you can also message us during the show or anytime during the week from our Facebook page, Spirit of Recovery. Just click the Send Message button right below the banner. And just as with phone calls, anonymity is always respected.
And today's show is titled A New Hope. New beginnings bring hope into our lives. And while there is work to be done, the good news is that we don't have to do it alone. We come to believe in a presence and a power greater than our addiction to provide the direction we need. Today, we want to talk about finding that power to change and a new hope in life.
We'll begin by sharing our own experiences of the despair that we felt in early recovery and in active addiction. Then we'll move into the solution of coming to believe in a higher power. After the break, we'll share exactly how a relationship with a higher power helped us to find a new hope in our lives. So, Dan, what was your experience of that despair when you were in active addiction or during your early time in recovery?
Yeah, in a way, I'm grateful that it's faded a little bit, but of course, that's something that I don't want to ever forget. You know, I don't want to shut the door on it. I don't want to relive it. And one aspect of what that despair felt like was this kind of, you know, feeling like I was on a treadmill, a very unhealthy treadmill where, you know, I might say today is going to be different. You know, today when I get home, I'm not going to drink or whatever. And I would affirm that throughout the day, and then round about 4 p.m. or so, I would change my mind every single time. So saying today will be different, only to have it turn out the same. Very disheartening, frightening, you know, certainly a cause for a loss of hope. And I'm glad I don't feel that way today, that's for sure.
Yeah, I understand. And I relate with what you were saying about, You want to remember what it was like enough to make sure you don't want to ever go back there. And also not wallow in it or spend too much time thinking about it. So my early recovery and time when I was in my active addiction was characterized by a lot of chaos in my interpersonal relationships. That was the biggest source of despair for me. Because my addiction was alcohol, drinking alcohol was the top priority in my life, even though it didn't seem like it. I had a lot of other things going on, but it took precedence in all of my relationships. And so that didn't make for very healthy relationships. And a lot of my relationships centered around drinking and created a lot of chaos. That was not a lot of fun for me. Some pretty tough times.
I remember feeling bad. And again, this is just about every day. Alcohol was my addiction. I was a daily drinker. Heavier. And I remember just sort of feeling bad, you know, guilty, maybe in the morning, but both physically bad, but also kind of emotionally feeling bad about the fact that, you know, my head was kind of fuzzy and I didn't feel that great. And I kept doing it every day. And yeah, I got used to it, but I still knew it would always take some time, you know, into the day, some number of hours till I was sort of feeling more awake and alert. And that's no good. That coupled with the experience of often wanting it to be different only to turn around and watch myself make it exactly the same and then wake up feeling bad about feeling fuzzy about feeling bad.
Yeah, that's a endless cycle. You mentioned the guilt and shame that you felt around drinking, and I relate to that. I was always very aware of my own drinking, sort of that hyper awareness of like, oh gosh, am I drinking too much? Am I doing something inappropriate? And I don't know if you can relate to this or others can, but that thing where you wake up at 3 a.m. with just enough clarity to say, what did I say last night? What did I do? And then you can't sleep. So that would happen to me where I would just be thinking. And, you know, I wanted to hide my drinking. I didn't want others to know how much I was drinking. And so there was that hyper vigilance of myself. But of course, you know, because I was drinking, I couldn't be very vigilant.
Yeah, it's kind of that spiral, you know, downward spiral of self-defeating behaviors. I can identify with that. I remember feeling particularly embarrassed about how bad things got at the end of my drinking for me. And like you, I drank more than I wanted anyone to really know. I drank way more, of course, than was healthy for anyone. And any sane person would have instantly been able to recognize that this is not normal and this is not good, what's going on. And so, you know, and like many of us, I was able to fairly successfully hide the drinking up to a point, you know, a point in time, I mean, where when things got really bad at the end, I was very embarrassed because, you know, the truth is out. I could not drink myself into the hospital and into rehab and nobody notice. You know what I'm saying? people notice. So what I had worked so hard to try and make private was all of a sudden feeling very not private. And, you know, I was embarrassed about that. Right. I had a lot of other things to worry about too, but you know, as an introvert and a fairly private person in general, that for me, that was a pretty devastating experience. Certainly feeling a lack of hope there, feeling despair, along with that embarrassment about how bad things got.
You know, what that made me think of is certainly when we're in active addiction, we do things that, you know, warrant a certain level of guilt. But I think that alcoholics tend to be very shame-based to begin with. So I know that I would feel guilt and shame that was misplaced. It was just kind of a generalized shame, like a dark cloud that sort of hung over my life. So even if I hadn't done anything to be ashamed of, shame was sort of just always lurking in the background, which is probably one of the reasons why I drank in the first place, was to not feel that. That's a horrible feeling. You know,
It works till it doesn't.
Right. Right.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say another aspect of that despair. A lot of people probably wouldn't call this despair because in some ways it's the American way, but I lived a very driven life before I got sober. I was almost, you know, like to a workaholic level of just always being busy and doing lots of things and very ambitious, very driven to achieve, which is not inherently bad, but at the level that it ran my life, it was not good. And so that definitely created despair because no matter what I achieved or what I did, you know, you can never get enough of what you don't really need or want. And so it was never fulfilling. And I was running myself ragged in that driven lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. I can feel the despair in that. You know, I'm reminded that, and I can picture, I would know where I was when this happened. I think I was outside of a recovery meeting place in the parking lot, and a guy that I knew somewhat well was talking, and he said, I feel bad about things I didn't even do. Yeah. And as soon as he said that, I recognized that in myself. Yeah. And I really, honestly, up to that point, did not get sort of the depth of that, you know, that kind of guilt or shame feeling that I was carrying. I mean, I just simply didn't know. And of course, that happens to so many of us. I didn't realize what was happening. And when he said that, I felt like, oh my gosh, you know, we made a connection there. And I've told him, I know exactly what you're talking about. I've done that same thing. How can I feel bad about things I didn't even do? Well, probably because I developed a habit of feeling bad about stuff. And, you know, that right there, we're talking about what was despair like. That was actually a ray of hope, right? The opposite of despair. But what despair was like is feeling bad about things I didn't even do.
Yeah. Yes. Free-floating shame. I learned that in recovery and in counseling, you know, that was a big part of my problem. And obviously we don't have the time to go into that, but a lot of, like you mentioned, a lot of the shame that we find ourselves carrying, or that I found myself carrying, was not even my own to carry. It was sort of inherited shame. The other aspect of the despair that I experienced was feeling like I had to go it alone. So I was a one-woman show. And I'm an Aries. I'm independent by nature. But, you know, in recovery rooms, we talk about self-will run riot. That sort of propelling yourself through life by the sheer force of your own will. And that is an exhausting way to live because we all need someone. No one can do life by themselves. But it was that feeling that if I want it to get done, I have to do it myself. And I'm the only one that I can rely on. And that was a lonely feeling.
Man, I just want to have written down everything you said and say it all right back. I had exactly the same experience. It's just me. I felt alone. This is just how it was in the world. I was not even aware that one could have a different experience than this. I have to do it myself. I have to fix it myself. I can't rely on anybody else to do anything. Amen. Plus one to everything that you said. I was right there with you.
I think it's a very common experience.
Yeah, I think it is. So let's shift gears now that we know about this challenge of despair and ask, what is the solution? Well, in unity, we affirm that all of life is governed by spiritual truths.
Yes, and one of those truths is expressed very clearly in Unity's first principle, which states that there is only one presence and one power active in my life, God the Good, Omnipotent.
And this is an expression of what we call in recovery circles our higher power, and that is what we want to focus on today. But we might ask, how can I find this higher power that you're talking about? I'm not religious. Are you saying that I have to believe in God? And what does this higher power thing look like in real life anyway? So, Michelle, when you think about that phrase higher power, especially as you encountered it in your recovery path, what comes to mind for you? What does that mean for you?
Okay, so I understand those questions of, you know, I'm not religious. Do I have to believe in God? I mean, I had long since left the religion of my childhood and was a self-avowed atheist, which is part of the I can do it all myself thing. And so when I came into recovery, I did not have any sort of belief in a higher power. I was starting from ground zero. And I had a sponsor who told me that if I didn't have my own higher power, that was okay. I could borrow hers until I got my own. And I don't know if that makes sense to other people in recovery, but for whatever reason, that made sense to me. So I couldn't believe in a higher power yet, but I could believe in the higher power that my sponsor believed in. And that was the cracking open of the door to that sort of belief for me. So I did that. I just believed in her higher power, and slowly but surely, I found my own higher power.
I feel really fortunate looking back that I somehow managed to find and attend Unity Church before I got sober, and almost years. If I do the math, it's 6-7 years before I got sober. Now I did not attend the Unity Church faithfully all that time. I found it through my spouse. We had just moved from Michigan to North Carolina, and in North Carolina, there's practically a church on every corner. You know, I wasn't used to that up north with the Yankees, but she had found a Unity Church through someone that she worked with, and she kept saying to me, you know, oh, I heard about this place, and I think you'd really like it. And she even went a couple times with her friend, and she'd come back and say, I think you would really like this. And I look at her like she grew two heads. You know, it's like we moved to the South. All of a sudden, my wife's telling me I should go to church. And I thought she was nuts, you know. But I'm so glad that I did, because I heard things there at the Unity Church I had never heard before. And it really captured my attention. And like I said, so we were going regularly for at least a few years there, kind of faded away. But when I hit bottom and I realized that I had a serious problem and needed to do something about this addiction, I at least had a concept, you know. And in Unity, we refer to God as principle, right, or law with an uppercase L, divine principle. And so I had something to, you know, a toehold, so to speak. Now, I can say I had not depended on this higher power for my life, right, like I began to at the end of my drinking in an early recovery. But when I think about what does the higher power mean to me in early recovery, well, it means what I learned about in a Unity Church that gave me a toehold. It has grown since then. You know, I think it's really deeply personal to each of us. And and I am a Unity minister, and I pastor the Unity of Augusta Church. But I think that my higher power concept ranges a little wider than just that, I find. But I think that's true for most people, even people in mainline Christian churches. I've talked to enough people to know that, you know, everyone's got some personal experiences, some wordless truths about God that might not be represented, you know, by the doctrine of that tradition.
Right. I don't know where this exactly came from, what spiritual master said it, but, you know, whenever we talk about God, the best we can do is point at God, because our human understanding and our human language is simply not sufficient to describe the indescribable. I'm one of those people who came into Unity via the 12-step program. So I attended a Friday night women's meeting that met in the basement of what is now my home church. And I think I went to that meeting every Friday for about a year before someone in the meeting said to me, "Hey, you know, we've been going to this church on Sundays. Do you want to come?" And the only reason I went is because it was a couple of my girls from my meeting and because they said, "It's really similar to AA. You'll love it." And I had that experience that so many people have when they first come into Unity of just, wow, you know, wow, this, when I heard that it was about a God of our own understanding, you know, that I had that space to believe in my higher power, which was just in its, you know, incipiency at that point, just beginning to understand what that meant. But I found that the Unity teachings really dovetailed perfectly with my early recovery. And as you mentioned, my understanding of God just really began to expand at that point because I was getting it in 12-step, but I was also getting it in Unity. And the two just really helped me to grow spiritually so much.
Absolutely. In fact, that is the very reason that our show here exists on Unity Online Radio, because there is such a natural fit between, you know, addiction recovery spiritual principles and unity spiritual principles. And they really do, I have found in my own experience, support one another. I think it's a wonderful combination. It's been like, I'm just so grateful that I had at least something, you know, going into my addiction recovery with to hang on to, because I was also, you know, I would have said I was an atheist if I even cared enough to define it, which I didn't. You know, I simply, it meant nothing to me. I didn't care about all that stuff in any way. Yeah. But when I think about what's a higher power mean, I come to this paradox in a way in my mind, because I find my experience of my higher power to be both very subtle and yet very powerful at the same time. Now, subtle meaning it's easy for me to ignore the influence of my higher power. You know, my very busy, chattery mind can drown it out fairly readily. And I need to make an effort to remember to, you know, take some time apart and take a breath. I really love that phrase that we find in the Hebrew Bible, the still small voice.
Yes.
That to me gets right at it. It's like, that I can get, that I understand. Describing that presence of God that I can experience in myself as a still small voice makes sense. I can drown it out, yet there it is. It's always there. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that the experience of God is a very personal one. And I've come to really believe that it's very different for every person, which is why we can't tell anyone else what their higher power should be like or should look like. It's something that we experience ourselves. And I had that experience, you know, it came to be something that I experienced rather than something that I believed in. And that to me was the difference between just, you know, blindly believe, you know, stating that I believed this, that, or the other thing and really experiencing it myself. So as I was getting sober and learning more about spirituality and began to, like you mentioned, spend time in prayer and meditation and start to clear away some of the wreckage and things that were impeding my being able to hear that still small voice, I began to have an experience of God. And it's not even something that's describable, again, with words. But when I had an experience of God, that was something that I could really hold on to because it wasn't something I had been told to believe. It wasn't doctrinal. It was an experience. And like I say, it's impossible to describe, but having experienced it, it stays with me to this day.
I want to leap up and shout, "Amen, sister," like in the traditional church.
Go for it.
I really get what's going on there as I hear you say that, because, yeah, that is exactly my experience. I do I have to say, I do love the Unity phrase of one presence and one power, specifically the presence and the power. I'm not so much about the one, that's fine too. But understanding God or experiencing, like you said, experiencing God as a felt presence and some kind, I don't even know how, some kind of power, that has helped me a great deal. And I think it's for the very same reasons that you shared, that I wasn't being asked to believe, and you know, I wasn't asked to check off down a list, I believe this, I believe that, I believe that, which I never found very helpful. I was, in a sense, invited to my own experience of this thing that we call God. And you know, and that I use the word God, and not everyone in Unity does, and I totally get and respect that. Because it's just like all words, it's just a signpost, right? It's just a pointer, like you were saying. The best we can do is point at this thing we call God. And this thing, even that word doesn't fit very well, is really, I can only describe as an experience. So a presence and a power, that works for me very well as signposts that fairly effectively get at what my higher power, what God is for me.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned people having difficulty, some people having difficulty with the word God. And I remember early in recovery that someone taught me to use HP if I wanted to say something in place of God. So HP being for higher power, I'm sorry. And that was really helpful to me because that was like my own personal God. It was like, hey, HP, you know, I can turn things over to HP.
I love that. A friend said that to me just yesterday. I know exactly. But let's hold that thought because it's time for a short break. And when we come back, we'd love to hear from you as we continue the conversation. The phone number to dial is 816-251-3555. Please stay with us.
Welcome back to Spirit of Recovery.
Welcome back to Spirit of Recovery. We're glad you're with us today. If you're just joining us, my name is Reverend Dan Beckett. I'm here with Reverend Michelle Jelinch. And we'll resume our discussion in a moment. But first, we want to let you know that the phone lines are open. So if you have a question or a comment to share, please give us a call at 816-251-3555. Again, the number is 816-251-3555.
So prior to the break, we were having a wonderful discussion. We first talked about the despair that we felt when we were in our active addiction and in early recovery, but then we moved on to the solution, which was coming to believe in a higher power. And we talked a lot about how that's a very personal experience, something that each one of us experiences differently, and that we were grateful for the freedom to be able to come to an understanding of God that worked for us. So Dan, now that we know about the challenge of despair and we know that the solution is a higher power, how exactly does that belief in a higher power, that relationship with a higher power, how does it give us new hope?
I remember for me, it started off in a fairly indirect manner. Even though I shared that I had found Unity Church, I had some concept of God that I carried with me. But, you know, a lot of those things, if you're not having the experience, they're just kind of ideas and words and concepts. One thing I found really helpful to ground them, you know, so that in a way, this was a way that a higher power helped lead me from a feelings of despair in life to a new hope, is simply being part of a recovery community. Because when I did that, I was surrounded by others who also had some kind of higher power, and it didn't matter. I'm sure it wasn't the same as mine. Maybe for some people it was similar, and maybe for others it was completely different, but it didn't matter. What mattered was that I was in the company of people who were walking the same kind of path, people who had found a higher power that worked for them. And so I could see how their relationship with a higher power supported the emergence of hope in their lives. And that helped me to see how my higher power could support emergence of hope in my life. So just being part of the community, seeing what other people were doing, experiencing it through them, just like every time you share right here on our show, I experience it with you. I hear it. I feel it because we've both been there.
Right. Yes, that's so important to have a spiritual community to support you in your spiritual growth, whether it be your 12-step group or church, you know, some sort of church. I found that both in my 12-step group and, of course, in the community that I found in Unity. And as you mentioned, it was so important because, you know, I was a spiritual baby when I came into 12-step. It was all new to me. And I needed to hear, like you said, I needed to hear others, what God was to them, what the higher power was to them, how it worked in their lives so that I could begin to figure out how it worked in my life. And the first thing that happened to me that was really so profound was when I took the third step. In fact, it was so profound that I began to see the arc of my life in terms of before and after the third step. For whatever reason, for me, it was a very profound step. I think because, you know, I talked about earlier about being independent, that self will run riot, that, you know, ambitious, driven, I can do it all, workaholism, all of that. And so this idea of turning over my will, I mean, not just my life, but my will to the higher power, to a power greater than myself was profound. It meant that I didn't have to figure everything out anymore. I didn't have to go it alone. I didn't have to be that one woman show just powering through life in the, you know, by the sheer force of my own will. And that was just huge for me.
I can hear the relief in that. I feel like I'm living it with you for a moment there, the relief and the hope that brings as you describe it. Absolutely. It is profound. And I can totally get, dividing life. And I do it too, not maybe specifically the third step, although possibly, but just, you know, before getting on a recovery path and after getting on a recovery path is the major division in my life. One way that I use the relationship with a higher power to move out of despair and into a new hope was through a prayer practice. Right. Now, again, and I'll do this a lot today, referring to prayer as understood in Unity, because that was another aspect of the Unity view of Christianity that really helped me a lot, was the Unity understanding of prayer. I feel like we really nailed it because it is very experiential based. So in brief, as we know, it's not a talking kind of prayer, it's an experiencing kind of prayer. And the kind of prayer that I learned about in Unity that I began then to practice in my own life, you know, we normally would call it meditation. That's really more the kind of thing that we're doing. We're just purposely taking some time to come apart for a while, to sit and relax and breathe, and then just, you know, listen, if you will, for that still small voice. It's more of an undoing than a doing. It's not so much that we're doing something, it's the things that we cease doing that I think where the experience comes in. And it's a lifelong practice. I've said before, and I'll say again, that my meditation teacher, Reverend Robert Brummett, said to me once, as we sat down with the group to do a meditation, and I made some comment about being a beginner, and he said, everyone is a beginner every time we sit down to meditate. And I so appreciated that, because I thought, well, maybe I don't know how to do this, or maybe my mind wanders because I'm not very good at this or whatever. Come to find out, that has nothing to do with it. Right. You know, every time we sit down in prayer or in meditation, we're all a beginner. And just by doing that, making that a part of my life, that is a way that God, my understanding of or faith, if you will, and God helped me move out of despair and into a new place and hope in my life.
Well, you mentioned Robert Brummett, and you can't ask for a better teacher in prayer and meditation than him. Love him. You know, my prayer practice has changed a lot over these 24 years of sobriety. And I'm a firm believer that any and all forms of prayer are good, and different types of prayer are appropriate for different times. I'm sure that my prayers in early sobriety looked extremely different than my prayers do today. But that doesn't make them any less valid. My prayers back then were, you know, please God help me with this. I don't know what to do. Take this from me. Take this out of my hands. Guide me. Show me what the right thing is to do. I don't know what choice to make here. You take it from me. And I probably wouldn't pray quite in that same way today. But that was huge for me. Like I said, that third step of beginning to turn things over to another power and not figuring everything out myself, you know, was such a big shift for me. And of course, with all things, you know, the proof is in the pudding. It's all academic until you see how it pans out in your life. And the thing was, after I took that third step and that started living my life that way, my life got better. It got better. And that was moving from the despair into hope. It immediately got better. Even if the circumstances of my life, you know, didn't entirely, you know, it's not like life all of a sudden became exactly how I wanted to it. Life was still in session, as they say, and things were still not perfect, as they still are not today. But I had somewhere to go with it. I had that partner in life, which was what became my higher power. It didn't have to go it alone. I could seek that guidance from something outside of me that wasn't Michelle's ego-centered knowing. You know, it was a different kind of knowing. At that point, I probably still saw it more as a God, you know, out there somewhere. But that was an important step for me. I needed to get out of my own ego self into some sort of higher consciousness, and turning things over to a higher power. That's what that was for me.
One thing that comes to mind, and I was reminded of it as you shared, and I can affirm for myself everything that you said, is that my, you know, developing understanding and belief, if you will, in some undefinable thing that I called a higher power or God, it let me remember that there is possible that there's more going on than I know. And just that possibility took so much, you know, it was such a source of hope just in itself. Who cares if I don't exactly know what this higher power thing is? Who cares if I'm not sure if my, you know, my prayer practice is anything, or if I'm just going through some goofy motions? None of that mattered. Just the realization that, hey, you know what? It's possible. And all these people seem to believe this, that there is more going on than I might know. And yeah, so I'm not in this alone.
Exactly.
You know, there is a source. Even just if I'm even just being very self-centered and selfish, there's a source of ideas for me to get myself out of this that I'm unaware of. You know, yes, I don't think about it that way today. There is a power and a presence and a source of wisdom and of guidance that I don't have to, you know, I don't have to have every book in the library. I can go to the library, you know, when I need something, right, that I'm feeling like I don't know what to do, as you said, or I need to turn it over, yeah, as we talk about, which I love and which I did last night. Again, it's such a powerful concept, I think, regardless of one's theology, right, just to draw a delineation between my smaller S self, the thing that's up at night worried about stuff, and the concept of, you know what, there's more going on than I can possibly know. Why don't I toss this out into this endless sea of possibility and let it go, yeah, for myself?
You know, I heard someone say in a meeting once that alcoholics have that unique combination of self-centeredness and self-loathing, where we think that we're the garbage that the earth revolves around. And so I really related to that certainly self-centeredness, self-obsession was a huge part of my pre-sobriety life. but coupled with not feeling very good about myself. And so, as you mentioned, just that concept that there's more going on here than just my own perspective. And it really opened up my worldview for me. And Unity played a really key role in that, because in Unity, I heard that not only was there one presence and one power, God, but that it was God the good. And to me, that was profound. So it began to help me see the universe as a place that was biased for good. Somehow, it's all part of the mystery, right? I don't know exactly how it works, but I believe it through and through that what we have here is good. And that was such a huge shift in my worldview for me, because I started to hear in Unity, you know, that all things were working together for good, that all would be well, all was well, and all would be well. Well, these are not things that I typically heard out in my pre-Unity universe. It's certainly not what our culture typically teaches us. And so it began to be this antidote to our culture for me, that I didn't have to be caught up in that, you know, self-will and that trying to control everything. And, you know, everybody's out to get me and I got to get mine. And Unity was showing me that the universe, God, was biased for good. And I could trust that and I could relax into that. And that was just huge for me.
You know, I feel like a bit of a broken record myself, but I echo that as well. Profound difference. That, in fact, was the thing I believe that, well, one of the key factors that I picked up in my early attendance at Unity Church that made me take a whole new look at this whole thing called Christianity and religion. I mean, I had left it behind a long time ago, but all of a sudden, and I remember thinking, this actually makes sense to me. You know, do those people know what you're saying? I mean, how long has this been going on? You find out, you know, it's 100 years old, and then you find out it's hundreds of years old.
Right.
It's like, where have I been? You know, I was definitely missing some stuff here. Another way that my higher power, my belief in higher power, helped me move out of despair and into hope was that it caused me to begin to look for the higher power in others. You know, we talked before about the importance of the community. In fact, I often remember and will share about how important the community has been. Well, if I have a higher power and then other people have it, maybe I could see it in them. If I looked, maybe I could see my higher power in them. You know, I don't even know exactly how they conceive of their higher power, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
Can I see, and in Unity, we might call that the Christ, you know, divine mind, Christ consciousness. Can I see the Christ in each person in here if I look for it? And I found that, yes, I could. I mean, and that doesn't mean I'm looking for a perfect person. It means that underneath all of it, and this is true about myself and about everyone, underneath all of that we might call dysfunction, or I really like the phrase unskillful use of mind. That seems, that seems less of a, you know, get beaten by a stick than dysfunction. Underneath all my unskillful use of mind and the same in others, there is this presence and this power that, as you say, is at its core good. I mean, that's what a revolution, what a revelation.
Absolutely.
And a revolutionary concept in my life. And yeah, that helped me a great deal move out of despair and into a new hope. You know, when I could live from that place, I don't need to drink in order to be okay in the world.
Yeah, for me, it was as simple as shifting from the world is out to get me to, you know, the world is in my favor. And that was really big. Another way that I was able to move out of that despair was because Unity teaches that God is unconditional love, that God is that power, which is love, not the small L love that we tend to think of as humans, but a presence and a power of love that is difficult for us to even grasp. And so I learned that that power loved me unconditionally, and that I was unconditionally loved and accepted by God, by the universe, by higher power, however you want to describe it. Well, for this perfectionist and this shame-based person, that was really big. And so I began to learn that it was okay for me to not be perfect. It was okay for me to make mistakes. I'm not sure how I failed to learn that in childhood, but somehow I did not learn that it was okay to make mistakes. That's what perfectionism is all about, right? So I was constantly striving to be perfect and felt all kinds of shame when I made mistakes. And so the idea that there was this vast power that loved me unconditionally, and now I understand it more, that I am a part of that. I am, someone once said, an eachness in the allness. I am an eachness in the allness, or as we would say in unity, an expression of the divine. Therefore, okay, well, now I'm getting into our second principle. If God is good and I'm an expression of God, then I too am good. And that helped me move out of despair because, like I said, I think so many of us are shame-based and we drink over that, we use over that, we gamble over that, we do all of those compulsive behaviors to get out of that feeling of pain and shame and worthlessness. And so to begin to understand that I was part of that vast source of love and intelligence, and that I was good too. I could make mistakes. I could be human. It was okay.
That'll change your life right there.
It will.
I can
it
hear
sure
it.
Did.
Preach it, sister. I'm thinking about the law of mind action, right? Which, as far as I can tell, that's a uniquely unity statement of a truth that says, so the law of mind action says that, well, I like the rhyming one, thoughts held in mind reproduce after their kind, which tells me that whatever it is that I go around thinking about, I'm going to get more of that.
Yes.
Right. That also, I realized, and this fairly recently, is also known as confirmation bias. Right. And given that that is how the human mind works, you know, it's not as if our goal is to eliminate confirmation bias from the way our minds work. That is how our minds work.
Yeah.
But we have the opportunity. And again, addiction recovery can be described as regaining the power of choice.
Yes.
I had no choice about drinking for so many years in my life. I regained the power of choice. Well, I regained other powers of choice as well. Like, I can choose what my mind is thinking about somewhat, you know, not with 100%. It's not like a TV remote where I can completely change it in an instant. But I have more than a little bit of influence over what's flying through my head, especially over time. And so when I acknowledge that the law of mind action, that's kind of the law of God action, right? And the confirmation bias, so to speak, is that I can confirm the presence and the power of God in the universe and in myself, as you say, you know, leaning into unity's second principle. And so, wow, you know, that is a way that a higher power helped me move out of despair and into a new hope when I realized I've recovered the power of choice, not just the choice not to pick up a drink, but a choice that the world I experience, the reality that I experience in the world, is something that I can shift and improve. And when I have the example of what I call God or a higher power as kind of the gold standard, if you will, things only get better from there.
That's right. Yeah, and we just covered the first three unity principles. Boom. But it's really true, you know, as first we had to learn that there was a higher power, then we had to learn that we were a part of it, and then we learned that the universe was in fact biased for good, biased for our own growth, biased for each and every one of our highest good. And as we began to believe that, our lives began to demonstrate that. So it really was true for me. You know, as soon as I started to adopt these principles, my life began to change. And if I believed that the universe was basically a good place, then I began to experience the world as a good place. And I began to experience my life as good. Now, does that mean that I didn't have all kinds of challenges? Let me tell you, in 24 years of sobriety, you name it, I've experienced it. But I was able to move through those challenges with that belief intact that God the good was the presence that I was counting on. That's what I stake my life on, is that this presence is one of love and one of good, and I can trust that. And as I believed that, that is what began to demonstrate more and more in my life. So yeah, it's exactly, it's third principle.
There's a phrase that I really love that I find I repeat a lot, especially at church, and it's this: resting in the presence of God. I love that concept, that idea, and that feeling, that calmness, that hope that comes from being able to do what I call resting in the presence of God. In fact, that's a description that I've used of meditation, because sometimes, you know, a word can get so shopworn that it doesn't really, it's not carrying any meaning anymore. And so I find that it's helpful to me to be able to describe things in different ways. And so what I'm doing in my prayer practice, which is AKA my meditation practice, I am resting in the presence of God. Practicing the presence is another way that I've heard of it. And so by doing that, I have been able to move from despair to a new hope by taking the time to, again, practice. We call it a spiritual practice for a good reason. But now let us move into action. We're on a principle tear. So Unity's fifth principle states, it's not enough to know these truths. We must live them. That means we must each take action in order to grow and recover. So here's something that you can do if you're listening to move from despair to a new hope in your life through a higher power.
So think of a way where you might be feeling despair somewhere in your life today. For example, is there a relationship that you have that feels hopeless, a situation that feels hopeless? Maybe you feel like you have to face life's challenges alone, or perhaps you just feel like your life is lacking direction or purpose.
What's important is to pick one thing, something simple to focus on for here in this exercise, because you can take what we do right now into your life this week and return to it anytime you choose in order to find a moment of peace. So let's use the example of feeling like you have to face life's challenges alone.
So use a statement of power, or what we in Unity refer to as a denial, to deny any power to despair. You could say something like, the feeling of being alone in life is not the truth of who I am. That feeling of being alone, having to go it alone, is not the truth of who I am. And say it with conviction. Say it a few times so that you can believe it.
And follow that up immediately with a bold, positive affirmation of a new experience. You could say, through my higher power, I am intimately and powerfully connected with all people in all of life. I am never alone.
Then take a few quiet moments to relax and take it easy. There's no need to struggle. Give thanks for your new experience in the world and move on with your day.
Again, the feeling of being alone in life is not the truth of who I am. I am intimately connected with all people in all of life. I am never alone.
Amen.
Well, we've come to the end of our time here together, and we hope that you found something that is helpful to you on your own recovery path. Thank you, Reverend Michelle, again for our discussion, and thank you to all who are listening on the podcast via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. We bless you wherever you are on your recovery journey, and we are doing this today and forever forward in memory of our beloved Lonnie Vanderslice.
Yes. And listeners, if you'd like, you can connect with us on our Facebook page, Spirit of Recovery, and give us your thoughts and feedback.
Thank you for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
What is it you really want in life? No matter what you've been through, you can still achieve it. I'm Sandra Ann Taylor, and in my Energy Activation podcast, we'll explore the science of manifestation, and I'll give you specific techniques to shift your energy in order to make your dreams a reality. I also do live energy readings, and you can be a part of the show by emailing your questions to me at sandrataylor.net. Join me on the mindbodyspirit.fm podcast network or wherever you get your podcasts.